Unmute.
Star six.
Star six?
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's see.
She's not muted, though. All right, the recording has started. Councilmember Hogarty, are you...
I think I did that wrong. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, because you said star six, but that means I need to bring up my phone screen. So hang on. Okay, I think I can do that. I'm so mad because I got on 10 minutes early. I've been messing with it. Sorry. Okay.
You're good, Kathy. So we'll start now.
Okay.
Okay. So welcome to Tukwila City Council Committee of Finance and Governance. I'm the chair. My name is Zach Don, and I have my committee members, Kathy Hogarty and Cynthia Delastrinas-Johnson. So we have three business agenda today, and the first one is City Council Procedures Update. Laurel would talk about this, and then we'll take turn asking questions. And then after, from the council members, once you finish asking your question or comment, please, because this item needs to go into Cal 426 and 5-3 regular meeting. Let us know if that's what you think should be going forward. Thank you. Laurel, please take it away.
Thank you, council members. This is the legislative package I've been talking to you about for a while. I'm very pleased to bring it to you tonight. In your packet, it's a pretty brief memo because I thought the heart of the contents was in the attachments themselves. So I won't go through the memo, but I want to briefly talk about what's in your packet, which on page 3 is an ordinance that would totally reenact existing Tukwila Municipal Code Chapter 2.04, where the current city council rules are contained. So it would strip most of that away, as I talked to you before. We have a few key things in there regarding the composition, open public meetings, and then referencing the fact that you would have a rules of procedure adopted by resolution. So that's the ordinance. Page 7 is a resolution that would adopt a rules of procedure for the city council. Page 9 is that attachment, which is a new document that contains the rules, several sections broken down to an organization that I thought made sense, and I hope you do too, or give me feedback otherwise. And then finally, page 21 in your packet is a table that explains everything in that new rules package and shows you if the language is new or if it comes from the former code, how it differs from what's in the code. So I thought we would spend the time in this meeting going through that spreadsheet, if that works for you. And so because I know this isn't a committee that needs to be read to, I thought perhaps we could go section by section, and I could call out highlights and then ask if there are any questions on that section. Does that work for you? Okay. So page 21 in your packet is City Council powers and duties. It's City Council authority. So when I say new, I don't mean I made up that language myself. I spent a lot of time reviewing rules from other city councils, looking at best practices and best options. And so a lot of things are legally as I got from perhaps other cities. And I also want to point out that the city clerk's office and city attorney both reviewed everything that's in this package before you. So any questions about the city council authority? Okay, moving on.
Oh, I have one question.
Okay.
It doesn't say anything about budget. Is there a reason for that? I feel like that's one of our duties, right, is to pass a budget, but.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. We could certainly add that. I mean, it does say the city council established this policy, but that could definitely be expanded. I'm curious. Yes, I will make a note. We'll expand that.
And then, if you're finished, I was going to ask questions, Cynthia. I don't know if you were finished.
I'm done, yeah.
Okay. And Kathy, I want to make sure that you ask questions before I ask questions, too. So let me know if you have a question on the first one.
I just unmuted myself. On the first section, no, I have no questions.
Number four, the city has no policy direction of judicial matters. Was there something that it wasn't there before, now we need to insert that, or?
It wasn't there before. I mean, it is a true fact based on state law, and so I just thought it would be helpful to call it out in this section that kind of describes what the city council's purpose is.
Yeah, I just had an underline. I think that's what Cynthia was probably asked, like a line item that talks about the budget. When I read that, that's the first thing that came to mind. I'm like, yes, we don't have judicial matters over them, but I think we do pass the budget that, you know, includes the judicial side of business.
Yep, that's a really good point. I can definitely add those. When this comes forward to the COW, any changes that come out of this committee, I'll show tracked so you can see clearly everything that you recommended. All right, moving on, Council President, Mayor Pro Tem. Most of this language comes from existing code, and it's all working well. I heard my voice. Councilmember Hogarty is joining by video now. So, these are all pretty much existing from the TMC. Any questions on Council President, Mayor Pro Tem? Okay. The next page in the packet is 22, and this section describes city council meetings, the various types of meetings, regular meetings, committee of the whole, special meetings, executive sessions, retreats and work sessions, attendance, and then a new section for remote meetings, because we've learned that we have to have the flexibility to allow for meeting remotely in situations like we're experiencing. And I believe this, there's a bill going through the state legislature that also addresses that. Any questions on meeting types? All right. Page 23.
I was just going to ask if there was a question for Kathy or Cynthia. As we're going through, ask your questions. I don't think you have to wait for me. I want to make sure that you get an opportunity as we're moving through. So thank you for stopping every section, Laura.
All right, moving on, page 23, section 3 is the legislative process. And this, you'll see some more changes from the code in this area. So section A, city council business, I wanted to put in a little more detail about how things get placed on agendas. And, you know, you always hear about things bypassing committee of the whole or bypassing committee. And I just wanted to put some language in there to clarify that can happen when the situation requires. Section B, I'm sorry, let me pause there at section A, city council business. Any questions on that? Okay. Section B, legislative actions. This is language that describes what ordinances, resolutions, and motions are and when they should be used. Existing language from the TMC about city attorney approving all proposed ordinances and resolutions. Turning the page to page 25. This talks about the order of a regular meeting agenda, which we currently have in the code, but I'm proposing a few changes I would love your input on. One of them is it formally as land acknowledgement, which you decided to do as a council. Another thing that I think would be good, and I've heard feedback from over the years, is you would like to have public comments move before before presentations, because sometimes we'll have an hour-long presentation and people that want to give public comment are waiting through all of that. Another thing that you as a committee talked about earlier this year is whether or not you want to have all public comment for items on and not on the agenda contained in that same segment, instead of having public comment for items not on the agenda and then having individual public comment after each item. So I was hoping you could weigh in on that.
Kathy, you want to go first, and then Cynthia?
Well, there's
and cons to both ways. If you have it at the beginning, then you know what people are thinking up front. But sometimes you get better response after they've heard maybe the staff presentation or the council deliberation on it. And then you might end up having to do that they might want to respond to that instead of the beginning of it. So, like I said, there's pros and cons to both of them. So I and basically we could just leave it like it is, but if there's a strong feeling to change it, that's not a bad thing.
I like what you proposed in terms of general public comment at the beginning, and if it's specific comment on the public hearing, then include it below. Like included in that section.
But how about on items on the agenda too? Was that? Did you mean that too, Laurel?
Yeah, and as I was talking and reading this page, I realized that the rules are actually silent. So the current practice is that you have a public comment period at the beginning for items not on the agenda, and then after each item, people are able to give public comment. So we could craft some language here that is very specific about what the intent is.
So the issue has been, which I have witnessed on the council, is that there's an agenda on, there's an item on the agenda, and that item is buried all the way to the bottom. And there is a lot of an interest. People came, signed up, they're sitting on the council, and we're going through like we don't recognize all these people. We should give them the opportunity to say what they came down, and then we keep that in mind when we go to that agenda that's buried all the way to the, or we have the option to bring that agenda up and say, you know, let's move this agenda up and staff will do their presentation and then you allow public comment or however that happens. What I am interested in is if there are more than, I don't want to even put a number, anyone that has the public comment should have the opportunity to do it at the public comment. If it's a general, if it's an item, we should, you know, because we know the items that they're talking about, we have the option to move it up and discuss it then, while if they wanted to wait, or we could discuss it and let that person know that we'll discuss it, this item, because there's a few items and we could follow up with. That's what I would like to see, because I've seen that as an issue and we need to respond to that.
So, go ahead, Kathy. Oh, thank you. I have a thought based on that observation, which is a very good one. And that is that at the beginning of a council meeting, we need to make clear what the expectations are. So, for example, if we want to take public comment at the very front because the item's below, then I think that there should be a plan. You see like 10 people or, you know, a significant amount of people waiting and it's way down at the bottom of the agenda. Then the council president or a council member can bring up, we have members waiting, should we move this item up? Okay, so another thing that I am thinking based on what you said, Zach, was we could have flexibility as to how we offer comments, but we need to have that certainty at the very beginning of the meeting. So it's like we will, because this is the first item on the agenda, we'll take your comment after we speak, or I don't know, I'm sort of free-forming it here. It's sometimes it's really good to get the input ahead of time, and sometimes it's good to get it afterwards. So it really is situationally based. So next, you know, all of them.
Could we give like the council president the authority, at least for the committee of the whole meetings, to take items out of order on the agenda, because, you know, I think we know when people are coming to talk about an issue, like, I think we could get a sense of what people are there to speak to. And so maybe just giving that, like, I don't know if anywhere in the rules or procedures somewhere that we could do that, we should change agenda order. The other thing I'll say is I think it's giving people the opportunity to speak at the very beginning, I think is a good thing, regardless of whether they'll, like, the presentation on the actual thing is later, because it actually gives us as council members an opportunity to know how these people feel about the item that's going to be talked about later. And we can sort of respond to the comment after that thing is addressed, I guess. And I say that to just say, like, they should be allowed to speak to items on the agenda that night without having to wait for that agenda item to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead, Laura.
What I think I'm hearing is the three of you expressing support for the idea of one public comment period at the beginning of the agenda that would include time for items not on the agenda and items on the agenda. If you're in a situation where there is a room full of people that you know what they're there for, you as a council or the council president could say, okay, we're not going to ask them to wait for 2 hours till we get to this item. We will amend the agenda to have the item earlier in the meeting. But I am hearing interest in one public comment period, which is more in line with what I've seen other cities do. You've heard many times that the council meetings are for council members to discuss. They're not for the public to engage with you beyond public comment. So I think it would be an interesting new thing to try if you want to recommend that to the committee of the whole. And if you want the committee of the whole to discuss it before a decision, that's totally fine too.
Yeah, I think I'm in favor of just one comment. I don't care what it is. If it's pertaining to an item that's on the agenda, and it's all the way in the back of the agenda, then we need to move it up and have a discussion, and we can work that out on the dais. But just, you know, I don't want to. I'm just trying to get rid of barriers for someone just trying to come and speak. So I want them to speak the item that they're there for, and just if they decide to stay, great. If we do decide to move an item up, which I think we should do, then, you know, they will be able to hear and how we discuss that item. But I'm in favor of having one public comment regardless of what that person is talking about. So is everybody okay from the committee? Okay. So we'll move on, Laura. So just one.
Great, thank you. And when I present this to committee of the whole, I will expand language there to specify items not on the agenda, so that it's clear that your committee recommended that. So you can go over that with them. Okay. I don't want to take too long on this. The other thing I wanted to call your attention to is right now the code calls out bid awards as a separate category on agendas. That's not necessary. Bid awards are legislative actions that you handle as anything else, and they'll be under new business or unfinished business as needed. And then finally, under reports, I'm proposing that I be removed from just the regular reporting expectation. I think that, you know, I'm a staff person that doesn't rise to the level of needing to report out, such as the council, mayor, or city administrator. So I propose removing myself. When Carrie saw that, she said, "Can you remove me too?" So we're proposing that reports at regular meetings and committee of the whole would be mayor, city council, staff in the form of city administrator. Okay. So moving on to the next page, the order of a committee of the whole meeting is very similar, but as you know, committee of the whole operates a little bit differently than regular meetings. So it's a similar changes with the public comments before everything else. And then the reports being changed to remove the two individuals. And then there's a brief mention of a special meeting agenda, which is right currently not addressed in the code. Any other questions on meeting? Councilmember Hogarty?
Yeah, Yeah, so we've always been able to move the order of the agenda, right? We, as long as we get consensus or voting, depending on, so we can always do that. We can move, rearrange order. But this keeping part is the new part. And maybe it would be just good to keep in mind that whoever's the, well, any council member can propose changing the order. So it doesn't have to be the council president. They just bring it up and propose it. So, okay. And
yeah. You're talking about the item that we discussed earlier, or this item, guys?
Both of them. Because it seems like we do it more, well, that's a committee of the whole.
Right.
We do it mostly in committees. Shuffle stuff around because of staff, but we can really do it in any of our meetings as long as we have majority agreement on that. Is that true? That's what I thought. Yeah,
that's correct. All right, are we ready to move on to the next section? Thank you. Meeting conduct, presiding officer. This is all pretty much straight from the current municipal code. No surprises or changes here. There was an overarching theme to make the language gender neutral throughout, so you can see that his, her is struck in many cases. Any questions on presiding officer?
Nothing for me.
Okay. Parliamentary procedure, it just says anything not covered in these rules will be governed by Robert's Rules of Order. Moving on to the next page, quorum, that's currently in our code. Seating. So this is something you talked about briefly before. This is when we're in an in-person meeting environment. Members will be seated at the dais in order of seniority, except the council president will be in the center during committee of the whole meetings at the right or at the right of the mayor. So here's an opportunity to think about that. A couple of instances ago when talking about these, I had suggested referencing Ann McFarland's advice she gave at a previous city council retreat that you might consider not defaulting to seniority for seating or order of speaking. You might consider something else like position number, which makes things a little more, I don't know what the right word is to say, but that's a question I wanted to ask this committee.
Cynthia, I'll go first with you, then Kathy.
I actually think as like the newest council member, over on the other end, I actually think it's helpful for me to have the seniors go first, just because you have more experience than me. So it's actually been helpful. And I really liked when, during budget discussions, you can switch it up. Like you can start at the other end too. It doesn't mean that you always have to start at one end, but it was, I'll just say that it was helpful for me, and I wouldn't necessarily, I'm not like pushing to change it, basically.
Kathy, thank you.
Yeah. So Laurel and I were on the phone earlier and we had this conversation and I said the same thing. I said, when I was brand new on the council, I sure liked being at the end of the road because I would have just frozen, right? I would have been like, oh, I don't know. But, I'm thinking that part of the reason that they went around the dais is because it's hard to see who is in what order. And I know that in other council chambers, they have little lights that you press and they go on in Federal Way. I know that I'm pretty sure that's how they do it in Federal Way. That way you can tell the order of who's raising their hand. So I just thought of that this afternoon. It does make it easy so you don't have to be like looking this way and that way and seeing who raised their hand first. If we were to do the other, maybe we might want to think of some little gadget that does that we could press to get to the order of speaking, because that could be distracting for the person presiding over the meeting, just to keep track of who raised their hand first and second and third and fourth and everything. So, but I am fine with the way that it is. I'm also open to new things like this, but thinking about being a new council member, that was really nice, not having to be on the spot right away.
Thanks, Kathy. I think the way I'll just address two things separately, the seating and the speaking. The seating, I believe that, the way we have it now, It has like a hierarchy way of seating. I think we are all equal, and you know, you should sit anywhere except where the council president sits. I just don't see where you are like, you know, you're supposed to sit this person next to or that or this seat. We should have the flexibility to sit wherever we, you know, feel comfortable. And we should move around. And we shouldn't just be sitting in one place. That's just how I would approach it. You know, speaking when, you know, we're taking turns, I think I've looked at what Federal Way does, Kathy, and kind of like that. We would have to invest some sort of a technology to tell us who goes, you know, who pushed the button first, because it has different lighting, and it kind of talks, you know, tells you which one was first, which one second. So it's hard for the council president or anyone else to keep a track, the kind of system that we have now. So it works to just say, hey, let's go through around the dais, whatever you sit. I think that one kind of works really well. But I think we should switch it up. And, you know, if you're on one side, you always know that's where the conversation occurs, so you're prepared. But if it's going to start on the other side, those folks should know ahead of time that they're going to be starting that side. So that's how I view it. You know, I don't know if we're going to make a recommendation on this. Maybe if we bring it up to the whole council and see where we go with that, what do you guys say? Kathy and Cynthia.
Throw it out to everybody.
Okay, cool.
You know, I see advantages to switching around. That kind of blows my mind, but I think that in DTAC, there's some place for one of the councils where they just sit down. Because, you know, otherwise, if you're always sitting by the same two people, there's some value to, you know, like sitting next to other people. So I'm really open. I say yes. Let's see what happens in full council discussion with
okay.
this. And if we do decide to do something else, then we do need some buttons or something, because otherwise it's just going to be too hard to tell who's raising their hand and everything else. So if that's what we decide to do.
Okay. So we'll push this one up to a discussion with the whole council.
Got it. Thank you so much. Moving on, general meeting decorum. There's a couple of new sections just reminding council members that you want to keep order and decorum and not interrupt others. You don't have any issues now, but this is supposed to be a document in place for all kinds of scenarios and all kinds of people. Focusing on your agenda, confining remarks to the matter under discussion. Next one, you kind of already talked about this with speaking and seniority, but I wrote this language to say council members will be recognized in the order in which they request the floor or by seating position, so that no matter what you all decide in seating above, it could be seniority, it could be something else, this section is seating position and it won't have to change. It'll be flexible depending on what that decision is, if that makes sense. The other two items are just rewritten from the code, kind of cleaning up the language, making it move a little easier. Any other questions about meeting decorum? Okay. Next section is motions, debate, and voting. And so this is basically a list of the most commonly called upon things that you would use from parliamentary procedure in your consideration of business. This is a section of rules that other cities have spelled out to this level of specificity. I kind of debated back and forth on whether or not to include it, but in the end, I decided it was helpful to have this level of details as an easy reference. You don't typically get hung up on parliamentary items as a council, but I thought it would be good to include, and the city attorney and city clerk agreed. These are not Tukwila specific rules. These are from parliamentary procedure. Any questions on this section?
I have a question, if you guys don't have a question. So one of the things that I was curious is when making a motion, I noticed on our council that there's few people that are really good at it and they jump on making a motion. And you know, so I'm just kind of curious, like, is there a way to put some sort of, or maybe we can discuss this with the whole council, but we got to figure out, you know, I'm not discouraging, but, or, you know, I want to encourage more council members to make motions, but how we do that, maybe just a discussion of, as a general discussion with all of the council members. But I was kind of thinking, if there is motions need to be made, we need to kind of arrange within how we seat or how we're talking that night, some sort of a, you know you're going to make this motion, a so person is going to make it, and if you make it, the other person has an opportunity to make a motion, so something like that. What are your thoughts, Cassie or Cynthia?
Well, I have some thoughts about that, definitely. And that comes under courtesy. Part of that is, it wouldn't be so much policy, but courtesy. For example, this was, let's say it's a transportation issue, then the mayor, because this is during the regular meeting, to make a motion, the mayor could say, okay, the next item on the agenda is the CIP item. This was in transportation. Transportation chair, would you like to put this on the table? And I don't know if you remember, Zach, but when I was council president, I tried to, during the committee meeting, I usually tried to say, this was in transportation. Do you want, Zach, let's say, do you want to tee this up? So it would be the same idea. We would just request that the mayor maybe bring that around and say, who is chair of transportation? Is it Berna?
Council member Steele.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right, Steele, would you like to put this on the table? And then maybe we would just have an understanding that maybe one of the committee members would do the second. And if they spaced out and there's this big gap, then somebody else could do it. And what it was like, some meetings, it was all transportation, but then another time it would be all finance and things like that. And there's some certainty to that. And that also sort of gives some respect to the committee itself that actually worked on it. But since that is a regular meeting, we'd have to talk to the mayor about that and just call that a standard operating procedure. And we could bring that up during the meeting and ask that for that to be a standard operating procedure, which is different than a, what's the difference? Yeah, what's the SOP is just a standard operating procedure. It can change, right?
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Laura.
I did have a comment I want to offer, but I know that I don't think Councilmember Delestrinas Johnson has gone on this subject yet, so I'll wait until.
I like Kathy's proposal.
Go ahead, Susan, Laura.
Thank you. So I'm hearing you in this line 4F1, prior to discussion of an action item, a council member must make a motion. We could clarify in that language something about the committee chairs and committee members. So if you want to take it to the point of recommending to the committee of the whole of this, then I can work on that language.
Yeah, so I'm totally fine with what Kath was suggesting, and I remember when you were council president, you did that really well. There are other items that does not fall into the things that you talked about, and you know, I can give you an example. So how do we make, you know, didn't come through the committees as you described, how do we deal with that, right? So when, prime example is when we were talking about when we're bringing aboard the city attorney, that was a different process. Somebody had to put a motion, we talked about it, we had a different process. So things like that, or appointments and whatnot, how do we do that, right? So I just think that, there's other than what you described that should also be, clarified when you're working through the language law.
Okay, I can work on that, yes. Any other questions on motion, debate, and voting?
Kathy?
Kathy, did you have an idea of how you thought that might look? Because it might be good if we had something that we presented to the council for, okay, so these are things that do not go through committee. Do you have some ideas of how that might, what we might do we could rotate or something that would be like easily to track. Did you have any ideas?
No, I'm very open. I'm totally open. If one person did it this quarter, then we'll go to the next person, either the number wise or whatever we choose to do. I just think we should be explicit in what that looks like, because I see that, you know, all over the place. And this is our process and procedure, so it's a good place to plug it in. Okay. I think that's it for this one. You go move on to the next one.
All right. We're on page 29 now. It just briefly talks about reconsidering a vote, questions of order, and adjournments. Nothing new or surprising there. Questions of order, just want to make it clear that the majority of council members have to, if somebody says something is out of order, the presiding officer makes a ruling, whether it be the mayor or the council president, but you all are a body and you move together, so you can appeal that decision if you disagree. So that's called out. Adjournments, this is language from the code. Oh, I do want to call attention to 4I1, where it says all meetings shall adjourn no later than 11 p.m. This is something that Councilmember Yadon wanted to revisit.
Say that again, Laura, sorry.
Sure.
Okay. Which line item?
It's page 4I1, adjournments. All meetings of the council shall adjourn no later than 11 p.m. I do want to mention that Carrie Sand,
yes,
said 10 would be more in line with other councils, but I know that you wanted to revisit this particular thing.
Yes, I did, and I put it under my general question too. Is there anyone else who would like to talk about this before I kind of get into it? Okay, cool. Yeah, I think one of the things I suggested was we shouldn't be there more than 2 hours, and 11 p.m. is excessive. I'm fine. What I was suggesting was 9 p.m. I'm totally fine with 10 p.m. if both of my committee members agree, and that's something that we can recommend to the rest of the council.
I think I think 10 is reasonable. It could help with just, If there's too much on the agenda, like it helps set the agenda too. It's like if we're aiming for the meeting not to go past a certain time, you know, it puts it on those who are developing the agenda to make sure that they're creating an agenda that won't go over that amount of time, but it still leaves wiggle room in case there's an item that just wasn't expected. I mean, last week it went long for good reason. There were presentations, there were a lot of people there who wanted to speak. Those are my thoughts.
Kathy, thank you.
Yeah, I think 9 might be challenging, but 10 seems reasonable. And again, the reason that some of the things that Cynthia said is that it would help us to be more timely and time sensitive and time aware and efficient with our meetings. And so that just seems, that's 3 hours. So that should be, I like it, Zach. You say 9, it says 11, we'll do 10.
Okay.
I'm comfortable with 10, 9. I might be like, oh, I don't know about 9, but 10 seems reasonable.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. And I think, you know, part of, is how much is on the agenda, and, you know, staff also plays a big part on this. On how efficient they are with their presentation and the material they bring forward. So, yes. So will 10 be okay with you guys? Yes. Good. Yes. So we'll recommend 10, Laura, and we can discuss that later.
I've got it. Thank you. All right, moving on. I'm trying to be conscious of time. We've got other items on the agenda. The next page is page 30, and it's Section 5, public participation, starting out with A, public hearings. This language is pretty much how it is in the code. It's just you know, the gender neutral language and rewritten for clarity. There's some, you know, very archaic sentences in the code, as you've heard me talk about. So I'm not proposing any changes to how public hearings are currently held, with the exception of, I think the current code had language about how the presiding officer could change how public hearings are run, and that just seemed a little arbitrary to me. There's no harm in having a process lined out, and the process has been working. Any questions about public hearings?
So if we are going to change our meetings to end at 10 o'clock, if you have a room full of people and they can all testify for 5 minutes, and it really creates a backup of being able to do things. So if we are going to go to 10 minutes, and maybe this public the council on the hearing topic should be 3 minutes each. Now, it says in here that for public comment, you can speak for 5 minutes, but you can also, it says in this document that you can adjust that to a lower amount, which might have to happen if we had a whole room full of people, and you might, if you can only fit, let's see, with five people, you can get 12 people an hour. So if you have 12 people that want to talk on it, you've already taken up 1 hour of your council meeting. So, if this is going to be like members of the public may speak for 5 minutes each, we might need to change that number or say that number can be adjusted. I'm not sure how the legality of that. It looks like it's in a TMC. So if we go 10 o'clock, I think we should look at this number. And that's what I had to say.
Thank you. Cynthia?
I feel like that issue was addressed in the public comment one, but not in the public hearing one. So maybe model language saying that we can change the amount of time depending on, you know, how many people show up, or I feel like there's language in there somewhere in the second part. If that makes sense. Okay.
Thanks. I think I recall one time, were you going to look into, I'm just speaking in terms of like what we, at one point we talked about the time allotted for public comment, either be 5 or 3, but it sounds like the language that we have does allow, if there's a lot of people, to just go down to 3. I don't know what the model looks like, best practice across our area looks like. If it's, you know, a lot of people or an issue that a lot of people signed up, we could go to 2 to 3 minutes. But the normal, you know, general items is 5 minutes. I don't know. I think you got to look at, you know, a couple of variations and maybe figure out what's the best route. But I'm comfortable with whichever direction we go. So. Go ahead, Laura. I know you wanted to say something.
I have a few thoughts I wanted to share. First of all, yes, 5 minute public per public comment is a generous thing that the city offers. That's not normal. I think when I worked for City of Seattle, it was 2 minutes each and only items on the agenda. So you have a generous public comment policy, and I know people appreciate that. You could change it right now to be 3 minutes each going forward. Our council has discussed that before and didn't want to make that change. Regarding the public hearing, public comment issue, yes, that's a great idea to mirror the language so that it's clear. If you have a swarm of people for a public hearing, you can limit the time they get. Because again, it's a council meeting, it's not a public meeting. Yeah, I guess that's all I wanted to say. So I'll make that change.
So Cassie, what do you want to do here? Do you want to change it to just a special public hearing meetings a loaded time, or just in general want to kind of revisit the public comment a loaded time?
Well, we could do two things. One would be that wherever it talks about public comment, we could say, I saw the wording in here. It says that based on if there's a lot of people, then you can cut the time down. That's just my saying what it was. That would be one thing. If we changed the public comment to 3 minutes, I would be supportive of that, but there has not been general counsel support for that. Zach, I don't know if you've been in meetings where we've had that.
Yeah, I would recommend for us pushing this up to the whole council, just make something that we need to discuss. And although I feel that, we could make a recommendation. I mean, the recommendation mirrors what's on there, but we could just leave it as it is and then have a discussion with the whole council.
With the downward, do you want to add the language that Laura was talking about? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I support
Laura, that. What we would do, I think what I'm hearing from Kathy and from Cynthia is that on the public hearing, we want to kind of say if there's a lot of people signed up, just like the public comment, we would go to 3 minutes. But the general overall question on 5 to 3, I think we should have that discussion at the council. I'm in favor of having just 3, cap at 3, and then we'll have that general discussion at the council.
Got it. And I'd like to also point out, say you're in a situation where you've got a council chamber full of people and you decide as a council you want to go down to 3 minutes each, you're still looking at a meeting very dominated by public comment. So I want to just, remind you of advice I've heard before, I think from Anne McFarland. You could choose actually to say our total public comment period, regardless of how many sign up, is going to be 15 minutes. That's all we can spare at this meeting. And so the language that I wrote on page 31, VB9, says if a large number of people wish to speak, the council may limit the total amount of comment time dedicated to that issue. So that's a little bit different from saying everybody goes from 5 to 3. This is saying we are only going to do 50 minutes on this topic. And that means that you might not get to everybody. I mean, that's a choice to consider. So you don't have to make a decision tonight. I just want you to think about that language and what that means.
Is that any? Yeah. But I'm VB9?
VB9, page 31.
Oh, I don't have page numbers. V5?
Yeah, 5, sorry.
5, okay, 5B9. I don't have a B9. Yeah, I do.
All right, so I think we just need to move, I think, but we're not going to make a recommendation here, so we'll just kind of... We'll have this discussion with the whole council. So let's just move on if that's all right with you. Okay.
Okay, so you went over public hearing, public comment. This is nothing different from what you're currently doing other than what you just discussed, which we will revisit. So we can move on from this section. There's a new section C, disruptions. This basically just covers so the code right now has language about the public cannot express impertinent or slanderous comments to the council. We've been told that that's not allowed in your rules. You cannot interfere with people's First Amendment rights. However, you also don't have to accept people coming in and totally disrupting your meeting. So there's this new section about disruptions and what to do, and it mirrors what you're allowed to do in state law. We just thought it would be helpful to have here in your rules. So it's new language, but they're not new concepts. Any questions on this section?
Go ahead, Kathy.
Did you get an answer to 5C4?
Or it I says did.
That, okay. Yeah. Well, look at 5C4. It says that if there's a total disruption, we can adjourn the meeting or have a recess of the meeting. Get the meeting room cleared out, and we can reconvene at another location. And I just had asked Laurel to get a little more information about that. Could you tell us about that?
Sure. So the language I have in the rule says, pursuant to RCW 4230.050, which I pulled, and it says, I mean, the reason for reconvening at another location is to get yourself away from the disruption. And so once you, let's say you do that and you move, representatives of the press or other news media, except those participating in the disturbance, shall be allowed to go to that new location. So you don't have to let the disruptor go, but you have to allow members of the press, unless they were the ones causing the disruption. any other questions about that?
Cynthia, do you have any? Okay, cool. Yeah, I don't have any questions on that one.
All right, I think we're getting really close to the end. City Council committees, this, I tried to write in some flexibility. This year's council president wanted you all to consider maybe not having four standing committees and running through a committee of the whole process. So section 6A1, the city council may choose to implement a framework of four standing committees. And then later on it says you'll adopt that by resolution. So that would give you the flexibility. If in any given year you decided to forego standing committees, you wouldn't have to amend these rules. Otherwise, it's pretty standard with what you're doing now. Any questions about committees?
I'm really interested in looking at, but I don't want to have a long debate, but if there is no interest in here, definitely interested in not having the standing long committees. Like I've talked about it last December. But if there is no appetite with my committee members, we could definitely have this discussion at a time and we can move on.
I think we're running a little low on time here, Zach. It's been an ongoing conversation, I know, but we got like two other items, don't we, on our... So that's the only reason. Otherwise, it's a very interesting conversation, Cynthia. I don't know if you've been involved in one, but I think we're running out of time.
Okay, cool. Yeah, let's keep going, Laura. Thanks, Kathy.
All right. The next page 33, there's a reference to ad hoc committees that's currently in the code. We haven't seen this council, or I haven't seen this council deploy ad hoc committees often, but that flexibility is there. Next is council vacancies. This gets a little more specific about what's in state law about when a position becomes vacant upon resignation, recall, forfeiture of position, or death, and talks about how you would handle that. The appointment language we've gone through twice in recent history, and that's already in the code, and it's just rewritten slightly. Any questions on council vacancies? And we're almost done. Okay.
Any questions? I don't have any questions on that one. Okay, cool.
All right. The last section is on page 34. It's a new section on public records compliance. This could go into a whole lot greater detail, but I wanted to keep the highlights in here for reference, just a reminder to you and future council members about your public records obligations. And this is all from, these are not specific to you. These are just specific to elected officials in the state. Any questions on public records compliance? Okay. And then finally, the last section in this table are the provisions that are currently in the code that I'm proposing for deletion due to just being totally irrelevant. And we went over those in great detail at your last meeting and you approved that. So any questions on that?
Nope.
Okay, well, that's the end of my presentation. Again, I'm asking for a recommendation on ordinance and a resolution and the rules attachment. I did pick up some amendments out of your discussion, and I will prepare those for the committee of the whole.
Are there any other questions for Laura? I have a few, Laura, general ones that I saw that weren't part of this. Let me just pull up my... on page 10, it talks about executive session. One of the things I have question is who and what, who determines what is executive session? And then can council members request executive sessions? And then my other question was related to executive session is prior executive sessions discussions that either discussions or decisions that be made and you have a new council member coming in, what sort of direction or guidance do they get from the administration or from the council? Seen and how certain things are done in our city, which I don't want to really get into the details on it, but I think we need to be very explicit. If you want to comment on it, feel free, but this is something that I feel like we should be explicit what that looks like for the council member, because this is something we are engaged in, and we should be forthright on what the rules and regulations and the best practices are in relation to the executive session.
Couple of quick thoughts. You know, state law outlines what you can discuss in executive session. It's five or six things, and it's typically related to land sales or pending litigation type things. I don't have the list in front of me. Apologies. Can a council member request an executive session? Yes, I believe so. David, please correct me if I'm wrong. As long as it qualifies for one of those categories, then yes. And then as far as educating new council members on topics of past executive sessions that are confidential, that is really tricky. I mean, that's a complicated nuance of executive sessions. You're right. Councils cannot take action in executive sessions. Every action is on the public record, and so that's where the education piece comes in. That's tricky. That's tough to answer. David, if you have any thoughts on that, please.
The one thought is with new council members is that, especially if it's attorney-client privilege, then as a new council member, you are brought into that attorney-client privilege. And so the attorney under that attorney privilege can what the term is, read you in on past issues of potential litigation, for example, or things like that, because the city attorney keeps that. But those are good questions about how do we call them? How do we make sure that they're within the legal bounds of what's an executive session? So I don't have any better answers for you, Councilmember Redon.
I'm just trying to bring it up so we can all discuss it. Are there any thoughts with my fellow council members on this regard? Go ahead, Cynthia.
After this is done, I think the resolution is fine, and I'm glad we had an opportunity to comment on some of the sections of procedure. This is just a thought or a comment, is when we're done with this, could we post these procedures on somewhere on the website just so that the public knows, like, our operating procedures? And if anybody wants to be a city council member, they can look at it too and see what we do.
Councilmember, I think that's a great idea, and I had a plan to do that. I think it's really, and not just in the meeting records area where they will be. I would like to call them out on the City Council website. Definitely, it's a great idea. Thank you.
Yeah. So the other thing I'm trying to drive the point, the point I'm trying to make is whose responsibility is for when new council member the onboarding process to say these are issues that are going on and you should be aware of it, right? So you don't know what you don't know. And I think this is our process and procedures. And when you come in, you're given this whole book to read. And if that's not mentioned, how would you ask that? So I'm asking these questions because I really want us to do better for other council members. And yes, the state is clear on what executive sessions, and I think we should plug it in this session. Or just to reference the RCW within that, the person can also look it up, the RCW, what governs or what constitutes an executive session. But the other points that I raised, when you bring this up, if you could, you know, put that on somewhere there that we can discuss it, I would really appreciate that. Or I can just bring it up as I'm bringing it up now. I don't see a whole lot of discussion with my committee members in that particular subject, so we can discuss it with the whole committee. Kathy?
Yeah, actually, this is just a whole topic that needs its own focus on it, onboarding of city council members. And I know we have a manual now, don't we? But there was so much that I didn't know that I didn't know. For example, I didn't know that that the city was self-insured. I mean, I heard that they were self-insured, but I didn't know what that meant until the first time I read vouchers. And I was like, what is this, right? So, I mean, there just needs to be a city 101 for our council members. And that's a whole discussion. It's really good, Zach. But it's like it's its own compartment. We need to talk about that. And it kind of goes in the same type of thing as this. You know, it's like these are ways we organize ourselves to make sure that we're, sorry about this, that we're doing, like you said, the best practices.
Thank you. I think this is my last one on page 12, under A, number two. It talks about in general time, in general items could come before the city council, and I was kind of figuring out, like, what are we talking about when we say general item? Do we need to define what general items are? So just a little bit more clarification on what that general item is or are. It could be helpful. Go ahead, Laura.
Thank you. So the section that follows right below that is legislative action. So I could be more specific. In general, legislative actions to come before the city council for a decision, and then, you know, it flows right into that section. So if that would be an improvement, then I can make that change.
Sounds good. I think that works. That's it. That's all I have. Any other comments, questions for Laura? Okay. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you very much.
Take care. All right. Go up the agenda. I'm using electronic, so I don't have the full packet in front of me. So we have Department 20, non-departmental expenditures. It's in a discussion-only item by Vicki. Hello, Vicki. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about an accounting issue. During budget deliberations last year, there was a quest made to put some information together on what Department 20 is. And so I provide a little bit of background information. Before we actually talk about Department 20 in and of itself, I think it's important to set the stage for how the city is structured for accounting transactions. So we follow GAAP, which is Generally Accepted Accounting Principles. And those principles require us to record all financial transactions in the general fund unless it's required to be recorded in a different fund. Within the general fund, it's then organized by departments or what we would call cost centers. And I want to use Public Works as a really good example because Public Works covers a variety of functions within the city. Everything from bus stop maintenance, streetscape, street lighting, capital projects, and they also run some utility funds. So all of those transactions are required to be captured in the general fund, except for capital projects. So any major road construction is required to be captured in a capital project fund. And then utilities, those are enterprise activities because they're supported by user fees or ratepayers. Within the general fund, again, we organize the general fund by cost centers or by departments. There are a handful of transactions that don't line up with specific departments. And what we use Department 20, we've always referred to it as Department 20, but it's really non-departmental transactions. And so those are citywide transactions. And for us, we record all of our transfers out. So we receive revenue into the general fund, sales tax, property tax, revenue that's not externally restricted for a specific source. And we use that money then to transfer from the general fund into other funds to pay for capital projects. And we record it into this Department 20 or non-departmental fund. In the past, we've recorded other transactions in the citywide department, including our liability insurance. We made that change a few years ago because we received detailed information from WCIA and were able to allocate those transactions to the specific departments so we can maintain those cost control centers. Recording operating transfers from the general fund into other funds, it's very, very common. Pretty much every city records those transfers in Department 20 or a non-departmental type department within the general fund. That's pretty much what our non-departmental expenditures are. As we implement the ERP system, Department 20 is something we're taking a look at to see if we should be restructuring some of our costs. More to come on that. We haven't gotten to that stage yet, but there are a handful of other citywide type expenditures that could be moved into this non-departmental fund or non-departmental department. Examples would be our claims and judgments. Those really are citywide. We have no idea what's going to come throughout the year or what department it's going to represent. So it's very, very difficult to budget for that on a department by department basis. But again, we'll have that discussion later on. Any questions?
Thank you. Are there any questions? Nothing for me. Thank you. So let's go to the next item, which is update on ERP project.
Yep. So I won't go into all of the details here. I just wanted to just provide you some basic information on this project. This is probably the biggest project the finance department has undertaken in many, many years. It's probably going to be about a two-year process from beginning to end. It's a phased approach. Our phase one is very, very aggressive. We're anticipating a go-live date of August 1st, but there's a lot of moving pieces in it to it, and any one little component that goes wrong could push that date out. But one of the reasons we're pushing that very aggressive schedule is we want to change our reporting structure so we can report to the council accurately and quickly, and in order to do that, we need to get the system in place. So phase one is a really big push. We're also implementing NeoGov, which is the HR side of the house. There's a lot of integrations that have to be worked through with this implementation, not only between the new financial software system and NeoGov, but between some of our other applications that we currently use, so Perfect Mind for recreation, Lucidy for asset management, Track It for permitting, et cetera. Anyway, just wanted to give you an idea of what all is involved in this process. We'll kind of give you updates as we go along just to keep you informed. So hopefully you'll see some new reporting come out sometime later this year.
All right, thank you. Cynthia, Kathy, do you guys have any comments, questions? This is a discussion on the item.
And I would like to add one more thing, if I could. As we go through this implementation, we are going to have to restructure our accounting a bit. So as an example, we have a couple of capital project funds that we have, well, they need to be broken into two separate funds. And in order for the city to create a new fund, it has to be approved by council. And so once we get the system implemented this year and we get the new structure in place, we are going to be coming forward with a budget amendment. That the budget amendment will be outside of our normal year-end budget amendment. It's not going to be requesting new funds. All it's going to be doing is reallocating the adopted budget under the existing structure into the new structure. And then we'll come back at year-end with the normal budget amendment that has budget requests, et cetera. So I just want you to be aware that as we do this restructure, I do have to have authority from council to formalize that, and we'll do that via budget amendment.
Yeah, go ahead, Kathy.
So I was just looking at the timelines of everything. Is this going to be pretty firmly in place by the time we go through our next budget cycle so we can optimize this?
The goal is to have it in place for the next budget cycle. I don't want to have a budget cycle like this last one. It was not fun. That's the other reason we have this very aggressive schedule in place, is we want to utilize this tool for the next budget process. We will be starting the next budget process in 2022, so next year. So we have about a year to implement not only the core financial modules, but also get our payroll and yoga implemented so we can take be able to use the position budgeting capabilities. The one thing we learned through the budget process this year is because our current tool, Excel, doesn't work for us. It's a very, very manual process. And so when questions come up about what's in the budget, it's very difficult to answer those questions because we're digging through papers, we're digging through different Excel files. It's not all in one place. And this new tool will give us the opportunity to put everything into the system, track those changes. We'll have a trail from what departments requested to the changes that took place through administration discussions, through council discussions, through the final adopted budget, and all of that will be tracked within the same system that everybody will have visibility to.
Great.
Cynthia, do you have any questions, comments?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Just a few questions. Did you hire a consultant for this?
We did not hire. Are you asking about the implementation or the selection process?
Okay. Well, I guess both. I thought there was just one. We signed, I remember last year, you know, we had a contract, and that contract had a specific, in, you know, firm that we're going to get in contract with.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I'm just trying to see if that contract is the implementation of that contract is what I'm kind of seeing now as the project.
Got it. So we did not hire an outside consultant to help us with this process. We did the RFP process ourselves. A couple of us on staff have been through this process before, so it was not a new process for us. And we relied very heavily on our attorneys to help us through making sure that the RFP itself was very, very tight. And then we also spent considerable time negotiating the contract. We also did not hire an outside consultant to help us do the implementation. We did talk about it internally if that's something we should do or not, but where we landed is an outside consultant would have to, it would cost us more money because we would be paying a consultant to help us through the process, but we would also have to bring them up to speed on our existing processes, where our inefficiencies are, and we felt that we have staff that's been on board for many, many years. We have a lot of longevity. We have folks that know their business. We have folks that know best practices. They know where the weaknesses are. Part of the contract with Central Square is helping us with this implementation and making those decisions.
So part of the discussion we had when we were discussing the contract was that, I don't recall their name, but they were going to work with our staff to figure out inefficiencies and all the items you mentioned. So they're not doing that?
They are. It's the software company. So we purchased the software, and it comes with that consulting piece. So it's part of the basic contract. We just did not hire an outside consultant to help us with it. It's all part of that initial contract with Central Square.
Okay. So what I'm asking is just the software firm is on board now, and they're going to help us with inefficiency and all that stuff. Okay.
Yes.
So the schedule that you laid out, did anything kind of change from last year when we were discussing this?
No, this is very similar to the schedule we came up with.
Okay.
Cool. Now, it is subject to change as we go through. There's a lot of moving pieces, and if one piece gets off schedule for whatever reason, it will throw the whole schedule off down the road. But right now, this is the schedule we came up with, and so far we're still on track.
Okay. You also talked about that we might be seeing a potential amendment, not new funding, but is that coming up, or that's just within this memo that within the status of this? So that's just some extra stuff that's coming up in the pipe?
It'll be coming up later on this fall once we are fully implemented with the core financials. Once we get the general ledger figured out and how we're going to restructure, that's when you'll see the budget amendment. And we'll give you a crosswalk to show you here's how the existing structure is, here's the changes to the new structure.
Okay, cool. Thank you. That's all I have. I think that's end of our agenda. Is there any miscellaneous items before we adjourn?
I had a quick, hopefully quick miscellaneous. And I don't know if it's better brought up in here, but I'll bring it up in here, and then if it's better for the other meeting, I could bring it up there.
I think we got, I don't know, a few minutes here. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I think someone needs.
Someone speaking. Okay.
Mike is not muted. Do you have ability to mute someone? Laura?
I do, and I'm looking in the list to see who is not muted, and I'm not seeing anyone other than the council members, so it's quite odd.
Okay.
All right, I'll mute myself. Go ahead, Cynthia.
Okay. So a couple of us got an email from this group. I think all of us got an email from the group called Black Excellence in Cannabis. And they were talking about, like, looking at zoning for recreational marijuana shops in Tukwila. They put out a number that said that if we did that, if we implemented that or we changed zoning, we could, it's possible, what they said is that we, it's possible that we could get, receive $1 million in revenue a month. I was wondering if that's something that we could actually have staff look into. Like, what are cities who are allowing more recreational marijuana, what are they receiving in taxes? And is this $1 million, like, real that they quoted? Is this an actual number that's possible? Or is that, I'm just wondering, you know, what would a number actually be like in revenue if we did open up zoning in particularly the South Center Business District? I see David came on.
So two things is, I know that a couple of council members had asked to be updated on this, and Laurel and I had talked about doing something before committee just to bring newer council members up to speed on what the full council had talked about. But to your point is, if you want to direct staff, is really bringing it to a committee as a whole would be a perfect opportunity, and get a majority of the council and bring it back to a committee, into the appropriate committee, and then we could give you more of the updates. So I think the last time, I'll let Laurel speak because she's actually been one of the keepers of this timeline, because the council has had previous conversations of this as well.
Go ahead, Laurel. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you. I just wanted to add that the Finance Committee in 2019 looked at this and the idea of expanding zoning, ultimately decided against it, didn't feel it was the right time and the right fit. We did look into what other cities receive and what the city of Tukwila could potentially receive. The state allows the city of Tukwila 3 licenses for retail, regardless of your zoning decisions, and we didn't see numbers that matched, you know, a million, which has been floated. But definitely, I mean, you know, as David said, if you want city staff to put in time to this again, you can definitely request that. And we can pull those numbers quite easily. The state has a dashboard about all the tax collections that cities that do allow retail have.
Kathy, did you want to say something on this issue real quick?
Yeah, it wasn't anywhere near a million. I don't think it was even a million a year. I'm not sure. I'm just going to go right to the end game there. But we can still talk about it. It wasn't even a million a year. So.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm totally supportive of this. I guess we need majority in order to have staff look at it. So if you can bring it up tonight, that would be great, Cynthia. And, you know, we'll go from there. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you. All right. Thank you, everyone. We are adjourned. See you guys at, is it Cal tonight? Yeah, I think Cal. See you guys there. Bye.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.